Hello and a very warm welcome to Monocle on Design Extra. It's that weekly tidbit of a show brought to you by the team behind Monocle's dedicated weekly design program. I'm your host, Josh Fennett. Each episode we ramble down a hallway of intrigue that we think deserves just a little bit more scrutiny. Many of us move through passages, corridors, and hallways on a daily basis, but they're often overlooked as significant spaces in their own right. They're seen as ways of getting somewhere else or part of a building's infrastructure. Well, Roger Luckhurst, a writer and academic at Birkbeck College, has taken an interest in these transitional spaces. He's seen how the corridor has gone from a utopian ideal to a place of unease in the minds of many. Do tell us more, Roger.
I was really surprised by just digging into the history of corridors. There was an essay or two here and there by an architectural historian, but not really any substantial discussion of them. And I think that's partly because they are spaces to get from one place to another. They just distribute cells or rooms along them. They, particularly since the 1960s, have been kind of knocked out of buildings, both office buildings and where we live. So in a way, there's been a huge kind of turn away from the corridor. Lots of people, when I mention this crazy project to them, sort of say, are you doing The Shining? Because that's a very kind of famous location of a corridor. It struck me as kind of slightly odd. Why should we be frightened of corridors? So in The Shining, there are some famous scenes where the little boy, Danny, who is in this giant hotel with his crazy parents, is pedaling around corridors in a really sort of odd and menacing way. It's one of the first ever uses of the Steadicam. What Stanley Kubrick did was simply turn it upside down, and it was about an inch off the floor, and it crawled behind Danny as he moved through all of these corridors in a completely fluid way. So what you get is a strange kind of sense of an inhuman kind of perfect gaze that is swallowing Danny as he moves along. The corridors don't make any sense. They don't connect up in a logical way. And that's a very subtle kind of twist that Kubrick does to us. And also the pattern of the carpet keeps reversing in those scenes so that you really are truly disoriented in a way that you don't quite register in your conscious mind. Those have become really iconic because it's a film which introduces us to a brand new way of looking, and it happens to take place in a set of corridors.
Hello, Danny.
There is a profound shift in the 1960s. For about 100 years up to then, we had huge institutions that were built by the state, whether they were asylums — there had to be one for every county of England, or one for every state in America. We also had workhouses and huge university buildings, huge social housing buildings. There's kind of a lot of sense in which these were actually built in a very utopian way. I mean, people believed that if you built an asylum, for example, along a corridor plan, the space itself would make people well again because they would congregate in corridors, and you could even reward them by moving them along the corridor towards the exit, which is what used to be a kind of sense of encouraging people to kind of get well. There's a very clear history of utopian ideas of the corridor, and they do go back to this very, very crazy utopian thinker called Charles Fourier, who had the idea that the ideal utopia would be 1,820 people, very precise, who would live in the same building, which he called a phalanstery or a phalanx. Why that number? It's because he thought there were 810 types of human being. You needed two sets of them, like Noah's Ark. Then the wonderful utopia would happen. Now, that's all kind of crazy, but actually it's got a huge long legacy. So a modernist builder like Le Corbusier was really clear that these new social housing buildings, one he famously built in Marseille called the Radiant City, you would live on corridors. It would be a transformation of our social life and life of culture. We would be transformed into these new social beings. nearly every single post-war planner in England who was thinking about social housing went down to Marseille and saw that building. And actually you can see the influence of Le Corbusier and Fourier on quite a lot of model social housing estates. I live in one in the centre of London, and it has about 1,800 people in it. We tend to think of the terror of corridors and anonymity in public housing, but it was, of course, built as a utopian thing. That sort of sense of the enduring idea of a social utopia along corridors or along decks where front doors open, where you can mingle, have lovely conversations with your socially isolating neighbours. The only other place where the utopian corridor still exists, I think, is in the university, because they were brought in precisely because they were meant to make people intermingle between different kind of knowledges and different skills. One of my favourite corridors is in MIT in Boston, built in 1913, and it is actually called the Infinite Corridor because it goes on and on and on, 825 feet actually, but pleasingly, theoretical maths is at the end, so infinity is at the end. It's beautiful, it's extraordinary, because you can move in a completely kind of fluid way through all of the different scientific disciplines. Even more nerdish, it aligns once a year with the sun. So they don't have Stonehenge, they have MIThenge. And all of the students watch how the sun aligns directly along the longest bit of the corridor. It feels really utopian, and people are building these intermingling corridors all the time. So there are still kind of elements of it around. It's really striking, I think, that I started with a sense of why are corridors fearful, because actually for a long time they weren't. People on the left and in utopian thinking saw these as really ideal.
My many and sincere thanks to Roger Luckhurst, who was speaking to this show's faithful producer, May Lee Evans. Roger's book, Corridors, Passages of Modernity, is published by Reaction Books and available to buy now. For more about Monocle, you can get our daily bulletins, peruse our many books on everything from global politics to cosy homes, and buy our fetching collaborations. Oh, or listen to our round-the-clock radio station. That's all at monocle.com. Sadly, that's all the time we have on this week's show. My many thanks to this show's editor and producer, May Lee Evans. I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.